Last night, I beard-kissed another man.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
And this is our 2015 in review.
Yes, it's only the end of January, but we wanted to get the challenges thing out of the way first so we can get started on that. How is your doodle a day going?
You know what? It's going pretty good. I have not missed a day yet, and kind of what you predicted. Some of the early ones were just getting in the mode, or mode, whatever, but the quality of what I'm producing is starting to increase as I start to, like, become more comfortable and want to explore
different I have been elements. Seeing them, and they are great.
Yeah, so it's... I figured the good stuff would have come further down the line, but I'm quite impressed with how creative some of them have been so far.
Nice.
So, and you can always check. We have links down below to our challenges. And what, in 6 months we'll do a check-in?
Yep.
So we'll talk about it in 6 months' time.
Good, because my planking is not going as well. In fact, I think the last time I checked, my time went down.
That's okay. You're just worn out from the previous time you were planking.
Sure.
Or something.
But this is not our challenge podcast. If you want to check out our challenge podcast, you can see it from 2 weeks ago. This is 2015 in review. Mm. The icebreaker is, what is your favorite stupid, fun, funny thing from 2015? There was a whole lot of serious things that happened, but what is the stupid, fun pop culture thing?
For me, it was... Oh, I wish I would have remembered to verify the date, but it was in November. It was a Thursday. I think it was the 12th, November 12th. When it was the day that Marty McFly had gone to the future time.
My understanding is that day has gone by several times.
Yes, if you believe the internet and believe memes and photoshopping, that time has gone past. But if you consult the movies, then this past November marked the date in which Marty travels to the future to save his son, thus making all of what occurs in the trilogy of the Back to the Future movies now in our past. There is no more future events that the movie
participates in. It just means you need to watch the TV show.
Yeah, apparently the TV series, as you told me, that they do go to the future and whatnot. So I guess we do have a little bit more to look forward to, but I mean, I watched those movies a lot as a kid. I think the second one was my favorite, just because of how crazy zany the future seemed, and that appealed to me as a kid, but I've seen them all a bunch of times. I consider it to be one of my favorite and one of the best trilogies of all time. Full disclosure, having never seen The Godfather, but I hear the third Godfather's not particularly good. So, whereas I find all three of the Back to the Future movies to be very, very good.
Enshrined in memory.
Nostalgic, glasses notwithstanding. And so, yeah, that was my favorite stupid, fun pop culture thing, is the passing of the Back to the Future timeline into my past.
Mine is probably less fun, at least for one person. The Foo Fighters were on tour this year, and Dave Grohl is one of my musical heroes, along with, you know, I have lots of them, along with, like, Peter Hollins and Alex Boyer and Lindsey Stirling and Celine Dion and all kinds of things. But Dave Grohl fell off a stage and broke his leg, and then as the insisted on finishing the show, as medics were setting it and splinting it and et cetera, and applying, giving him aid. I believe his quote was, "I can sit down to play guitar and scream. I don't need a leg for that."
I should really watch the footage of that, not the injury part, but them splinting it, because I know what kind of player he is. He's a very full body animated player in terms of guitaring.
He's very sedate when he's on the chair.
I guess, yeah, he was in too much pain to move around, but when he's rocking out, like, his whole body gets into it. I can imagine how difficult it must have been to splint if that's what he was doing.
I don't think he was moving very much. I think they gave him quite a lot of painkillers. Although my other, because I have two answers for this, my other silly favorite pop culture. Yeah, reversal.
Whoa.
My other silly favorite pop culture thing to happen in 2015 is also about the Foo Fighters.
Are you talking about that giant fan-made...
The band in Italy. They put together 1,000 people and played... What was it? Learning to Fly.
Learning to Fly, yeah.
And it was just... I saw the footage from the drone footage and all these drummers and all these guitarists. And it just... It looked really cool.
I got chills the first time I watched it. Yeah. When even before everybody started singing, when just the drums pick up and then you get the first couple notes on the guitar, just every, like, you know, probably if you split it down fairly evenly, like, you still have, what, one, well, I guess, so now it'd be 2/3 of the people would still be playing guitar. But I mean, like, just that many guitars all playing together. Wow. Like, I got chills.
The amount of practice that goes into that.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, that was, oh man, the notion. Also, given that we live in Canada, the notion of having a field where you could do that remains unspoiled for the length of time it would take to practice and shoot that video, because like they probably did it like 10 times,
yeah,
or more in that afternoon,
yeah.
And then sort of took the best cut or pieces of the best cuts.
Yeah.
But
I like to think it's just because the Europeans are better stewards of the environment than we are.
No, it's because living in Canada is bullshit.
Well, because I went to Heavy TO in 2012, and that, they have not had a massive outdoor metal concert there since then. And I don't even think the grass has grown back because it was so wet and muddy by the end of the 2 days.
Yeah, it's mostly the weather in Canada is garbage.
Yeah.
As opposed to Italy, where I understand it is quite nice most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, two oddly Foo Fighters related.
I have a connection to one of those as well. I tweeted my x-ray pictures to Dave Grohl in support and sympathy for his broken ankle. I did that. I'm like, hey, man, you're like, I feel your pain. I broke my ankle, and I shot him the x-ray of the plate and the screws.
You were a strange man.
I am a strange man, but I could feel his pain because mm-hmm. I know what it's like.
I've never broken a bone. But yeah, those are our stupid fun things.
Mm.
And to break down 2015, rather than sort of trying to recap everything that happened in it, there are lots of places that do that. Mm. Even recapping everything that happened in our lives, there are no places that do that.
Mm.
If you really want a very, very short rundown of everything that happened in 2015, you can watch Daystorm's wrap-up, which will be in the show notes, and is wonderful. Daystorm does it every year for at least, I think, the past 2 or 3 years, and it's really fun.
Yeah. No, Jim showed it to me as we were preparing and writing this episode, and holy shit, that was, like, it is amazing what he does in the 3.5 minutes or so that it was. So
it's... Man, the man has some serious, serious chops.
Yeah. But instead, we figured running down a list of current events or world events or how crappy the world felt sometimes in 2015, we would chunk it down a little bit and stick to three topics.
Yeah.
So, three main ones.
A thing that you are proud of.
Yep.
A thing that you're embarrassed about.
Yep.
And a thing that you learned.
It's kind of funny. These are specifically about us rather than talking about stuff outside of us. Usually, like, I'm fairly introspective and you're talking about other people, but
I find it very difficult to be proud of things that happen outside of me in the further they are, the removed they are from me, the sort of the less ability I feel to feel proud of them. Similarly with embarrassed, I'm not often embarrassed about things that happen externally. I am embarrassed for people sometimes.
Yeah.
And learning, I don't know that I can make a claim that, oh, we all learn this thing this year. I think that there are definitely lessons to be learned from events this year.
I think we all learned that Dave Grohl's a badass.
We knew that.
Yeah.
We knew that. Like that wasn't really up for dispute. But no, like, there are all kinds of lessons. But to say that the world has learned from it, I think, is to display a naive optimism.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
I can't say what the world has learned. I can say what I have learned. Yeah. So what are you proud of?
So, we've talked about it several times, or at least mentioned it several times in the podcast, but last year, once I healed up from my broken ankle at the tail end of 2014... I was a little bit more serious about going to the gym. I made the transition from machines to mostly free weights. Towards the end of the year, I started focusing a little bit more on nutrition, or at least being more mindful of my nutrition. So, I mean, there was a lot of those kinds of changes and, you know, like dropping weight and whatnot. But I'd say the thing that I'm most proud of was getting into bench pressing. And so, like, there's two levels to that. First, when I first started bench pressing, which was a huge mental hurdle for me because in my mind, I couldn't bench press unless I could bench press with the 45-pound plates on either side. You know, like, we call it one plating, right? We don't really count anything smaller than a 45-pound plate as a plate. So, you know, I couldn't do it without benching one plate on either side. And that was just, like, a mental macho thing that if I couldn't do it with the full-size plates, then it was, like, weak or improper or wasting my time or I should just stay to the machines or whatever. So there was a point where I looked over and I said, okay, I'm going to give it a try, and I tried it out. I'm like, I'm just going to do, like, one rep. And then I did one rep. It's like, okay, I can do two reps, three reps. And I think I went up to six, and then I stopped as a set. So, I mean, like, that was pretty impressive. But the most impressive was I did a fitness consultation with a trainer, just a quick rundown, and he and I spent 30 or 40 minutes talking about my health, my goals, my past, my injuries, and stuff like that. You know, he wasn't really taking me on as a client, but this was a free consultation that they offered, and I said, I'm looking to get into strength-based move, like a lot of powerlifting stuff, so I've never deadlifted before. I've squatted before, but nothing really impressive, and I do a little bit of deadlifting. Bench pressing. And I wouldn't mind learning how to do them properly and increasing them. And he goes, okay, let's go check out your bench. So we go out and load up the 45s, and I do a warm-up set. And then I do another warm-up set where he watched my form, and then we did a set where he corrected it. And so he advised me to, you know, like, push the bench away from my back kind of deal rather than thinking about moving the weight. And he told me, like, position your hands this way and keep your elbows tucked in closer to your body, but you're a bigger guy, so feel free to widen your grip. So, you know, just those little mechanical elements of how to make the movement more efficient. Mm-hmm. And then I went and got a drink of water, and I came back, and in addition to the 45-pound plates, he had two 25-pound plates. And
so that is how many pounds altogether?
With the bar, it's 185 pounds.
And what's that in metric?
Some number of kilos. I don't think about it in terms of kilos.
It's around 90.
Is it around 90? Okay.
We live in Canada,
fair,
Ryan.
Fair. Anyway, so yeah, if the bar is 45, then you got the two 45-pound plates, so it's 185 pounds. Or it is 185 pounds. And I looked at it, I'm like, I've never done that before. I think the most I might have went up is like 145, you know, just adding 5-pound plates, or maybe 155 adding the two 10-pound, like a 10-pound plate on either side. But he goes, no, don't think about it in terms of trying to do 5 or 6. Let's just do 1 or 2, and I'll be here to spot you. Okay. So I get under, and like, I set myself up, and so yeah, we unrack, and the bar goes down, comes back up. I'm like, okay, we got one. And I do a second one, struggling a little bit towards the top. And then the third one, he had to assist me to get it up past the midpoint because I kind of burnt out. But basically, in the span of 10 minutes with a little bit of coaching, he not only took my form and capacity up to 185, but also he kind of broke down that mental side of it, that it's actually, you know, it is doable. And this is something that you can achieve. And I never thought that I could put 50 pounds in a single session on it. Now, I mean, obviously when you reflect on it, yeah, I could have benched more before I realized I could.
Yeah.
But that's not what I'm taking away from it. I'm taking away from it that you know, like, this isn't just, you know, schlubby fat me in the gym, right? Like, it kind of breaks down that barrier that, you know, this is something that you can do it. I mean, I might not look like the guys over there, but we're all doing the same thing, and I can achieve these kinds of outcomes.
The powerlifting was inside you all along.
Apparently, I didn't need to go searching for it. I found it within myself.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that I haven't made mistakes since, because I tried 185. Yeah, I tried 185 after that at another time without a spotter, and I got...
That seems unwise.
Yeah, I got one rep. On the second rep, I couldn't get the bar back up, and I ended up bringing it back down to my chest, which pinned me to the bench. And then I had to make the decision to call for help or to, like, roll to the side so the plates would roll off and I would draw all sorts of attention to myself. Or as I tried to do, I tried to just roll the bar slowly down my body, not let anybody see, get it over my gut until I finally could get to my hips and sit up. But then the guy in front of me saw it, and he was like, we locked eyes, and I'm just like, come help me.
rescue me.
And then of course, I stood up and tried to, like, pull it. Oh, yeah, man, it was really heavy. I just couldn't get under it, man. It was just, like, so heavy, you know. As opposed to thank you for saving my life because I was going to die under the barbell.
I can feel my beard growing. I'm going to be here. Because even when, I assume when the gym closes and they turn the lights off for the evening, they don't, like if you're trapped under your bar, they just leave you there because like, you wouldn't accept help normally.
Yeah.
You're such a fitness bro.
Just leave. Yeah, I know. I'm broing out all the time. But so yeah, I've made mistakes in fitness and nutrition and whatnot in 2015, but I would say the thing that I'm most proud of is breaking down that mental barrier, and it, like, bench pressing is the proxy for it, but breaking down that barrier that something like this is accessible to somebody like me. Because a lot of times you look at fitness models or, you know, strong guys, and you think, like, yeah, I mean, I suppose I can work a lot and I can approach something to that, but a lot of times there's that block of, like, I don't have the genetics. I don't have the ability. You know, I can't do this. And just something as little as that, like learning how to do it properly and having somebody there to coach you along, strips all that away. And it's like, you know what? Like, you focus on you. Like, you're not benching 2 plates, 3 plates, 4 plates. Although if you're benching 4 plates, that's really impressive. But like, you do you. You progress at your own level. You try to beat your own numbers, and that's the most important thing. And sometimes it takes a little bit of, you know, help from the outside before you realize that. So I'm really proud of that.
Nice.
And I've rambled enough. So Jim, what are you proud of for 2015?
Well, you had a bro answer, and I have a nerd answer. So in 2015, in August, I wrapped up my D&D games. Two of them, in fact. We've been doing the live stream on the Riot channel for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And we did it on my channel before that. And then I also had a game that I ran in my apartment for about 2 years. We started in the 5th edition D&D playtest. And it expanded to become a real D&D game after the playtest was over, because I just couldn't sort of bear to stop it. And the D&D games operate in the same world. They operate even in the same setting. You can find a link to it down below, because our D&D community very recently became public, so you can see the current D&D games that are going on, and their reflections, and the setting, and things like that. But the past D&D games, people had a lot invested in them, and there was a lot sort of going on, and we culminated in this 15-player mashup event. They fought a giant evil dragon, and a whole bunch of plot threads got tied up. And the best part about it, we're talking like a 7-hour game. By the way, running a D&D fight for 15 people is really challenging. It takes a lot of time, even if you're running it really efficiently, mm-hmm. as I learned.
Did you count how many rounds it was?
5.
That was it, 5. Keep in mind,
We averaged about 45 minutes a round.
Keep in mind that a D&D round in-game is, what, 6 seconds?
6 seconds.
Yeah. So you went 5. So the fight lasted
less
30 than seconds.
Yeah.
30 seconds in the game, and you were spending 45 minutes a round.
Yeah. Because we had 15 people, and everybody's got to get up, walk to the battle map. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, they were fighting about 4 or 5 enemies. Mm-hmm. They were strategizing in between there. They were stopping. There were snacks.
Do you feel in retrospect that maybe the challenge rating doesn't reflect reality? Like, it was... You'd think that a fight like that might take a little bit longer. And I understand that the longer the fight goes in-game, the more likely you are to exhaust the resources of the players, a.k.a. killing them. But, like, 30 seconds for a dragon and some other minions? Don't you think there's a disparity there?
They were quite strong.
Yeah.
The level, the 3-year game, Legends of Madian, got up to about level 9, level 10.
Okay.
And the other game was about level 7.
Okay.
So they had a good mix. I also simplified it a bit because I had a couple of people who were guests, who were visiting. And so one of them got to play the dragon. So instead of like a full-fledged, straight-up dragon, what they got was an evil, undead dragon that fits on like a file card. which is really fun because then I didn't have to worry about me being the one who killed somebody's character that they put 3 years into.
Yeah.
And that was nice. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I only killed one PC, and I'm like, I could have done better. I'm just saying, as a killer GM, I could have done better. But the best part about it wasn't even the fight. The fight was the sort of irrelevant part. It was the conversations that we got to have around it, is that this notion that your character is going out to possibly to die. And they had considered that. They're like, you know, there's a war going on around them, and they're like, what if we die? And then the people they look to for leadership were like, we don't care if you die. Every minute you buy, every second you buy saves lives. Mm-hmm. We are willing to spend your lives in this cause. Are you willing to give them? Mm-hmm. So it is essentially their last night on Earth. What did they do with it? And we got some really interesting storytelling out of that, out of 14 characters. It was the same afterward when I got everyone to tell me their denouement. How does your character's story end? How do they fit into this world afterward? And everybody sort of got to... It isn't very often that you get to finish your character's story.
I've been playing D&D off and on for the last 10 years, and it's happened once for me where we didn't quit or the game didn't fall apart, where we actually had a moment where we said, okay, this can be the end of the story for the mm-hmm. character. So yeah, it doesn't happen very often at all.
And I tacked a couple sentences onto each one of them, and now those are true. They're canon. They exist in the D&D setting. Mm-hmm. The current games take place 10 years after that event, so they don't have to live in its shadow. Mm-hmm. But their actions ring forward. I have been running games in that setting for 10 years, and actions from 10 years ago are still ringing forward into today in a really interesting way. Mm-hmm. It's sort of fun when I'll have that moment where I sneak in a callback to something, and I'm the only one that gets it. But it doesn't matter because I get it. And it's the statement I've been making since the beginning is, you will permit me my little jokes. But it was really great to see all of that come to fruition. And afterwards, we went out to the pub, and I got to sort of fill them in on some of the stuff that I'd had working behind the scenes, some of the stuff that almost happened, but we didn't quite get there, or... we dug into some of the subplot things that fell by the wayside. I answered a lot of questions, and I got to find out how much that campaign, like, because the online game, we have retired, mm-hmm. at least for the time being. And I got to find out how much that campaign meant to everybody. It was a really good feeling, and I'm really proud of sort of the fact that we managed to culminate 3 years into 7 hours of rolling dice. God, I'm such a nerd.
Yeah, that's okay. I forgive you.
Well, good. Forgiveness of a bro means that I will get my wings. Yeah. things that we're embarrassed about.
You mean other than flexing on camera for the podcast? For those who are listening.
For those who are listening, Huck was flexing. It was quite impressive.
I was displaying my bro-ness.
I'm embarrassed about being a shut-in.
Yeah?
Yeah, I spent a lot of 2015 sort of taking a step back from stuff. And probably more than I should have. And we did a video about it. I am here now. And we'll put that in the show notes. But that was when I went to an art opening. And there was all kinds of really weird and great stuff there. But it is easy to get caught up in that grind. Mm-hmm. The work that I'm doing now it doesn't just occupy my time, it occupies a lot of my attention. So it is easier to get caught in that thing of go home and sleep mm-hmm. and opt out of doing things, even though doing things is really fun. and doing things gives me energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a thing I regret. I definitely skipped out on a lot of stuff that I otherwise shouldn't have. And I relied on other people like Kaylee and you and Ryan Consul. You can find his channel in the show notes too. To give me that impetus to go outside
mm-hmm.
and to leave my apartment. And now in 2016, I have mandatory exile Fridays. I have to leave my apartment. I have to go somewhere. Because if I spend a lot of time in my apartment editing and mm-hmm. running D&D and sleeping and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget that I can leave sometimes. And that there is a whole giant world out there that I can experience without having to see it through the internet. So last Friday, I went swing dancing in Stratford, and it was a great time.
You're already off to a good start, then.
Yes. Yes, I am. How about you? What are you embarrassed about from 2015?
So this is related to the podcast. You will remember back in November, we had a special guest on, and we made all sorts of promises and discussed all sorts of cool things about NaNoWriMo.
Yes, and indeed.
That we were going to attempt NaNoWriMo.
I tried very hard.
We tried very hard.
9,000 words.
Yeah. I don't remember how many I got. But, there's a little bit about falling behind in NaNoWriMo. But for me, I just kind of stopped. Like, I fleshed out the start of the story. I had a general gist of where the story might go. I knew how it was going to end. But I couldn't make that transition from, like, the intro a little bit set up to the next bit. I just couldn't make that leap, and then it just got put on the back burner, and then it stayed on the back burner, then eventually all of the liquids kind of boiled away, and it kind of crusted over, and then it was really hard to scrape out of the pot, and then you just throw the pot away. Essentially what I'm saying is
this
I quit.
This is an elaborate analogy.
I quit NaNoWriMo, and I feel really bad about it, not just because I made an internet promise. Yeah, it's I felt really bad about it because it's also NaNoWriMo and quitting that is kind of a proxy for some of the other things like in the personal life of quitting. So like little projects that you start along the way or like the only thing that I really in 2015 that I managed to make stick was going to the gym consistently, although I started off going 3 days a week and then eventually I transitioned down to 2 days a week because it was a little bit more manageable. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's obviously recognizing when you need to scale back, but at least it wasn't a full quit. But there are other things that, you know, you start throughout the year with the good intention of finishing and you just don't. So like I wanted to do a little bit more work with electronics in 2015.
Yeah.
I didn't quit books because I almost wasn't reading any books, but I was really bad about like not following through on wanting to read more in 2015. And then, yeah, so, like, NaNoWriMo is just the perfect example of one, especially you as an audience would know, of wanting to start something, and then you just, it just, we didn't even talk about, like, wanting to quit. It just, all of a sudden, we stopped, well, we ran out of videos for the month of November, but but in December, we didn't really talk about it. Like, it was, we were both kind of like, yeah, we're just going to keep this quiet, and maybe nobody will notice. But full disclosure, I quit fairly early on. The gym got a hell of a lot more progress out of it than I did, but
Desert Bus was what ruined me.
Yeah, so I feel really embarrassed.
I can't write and watch Desert Bus.
Yeah. So I'm embarrassed about the things that I quit in 2015.
Fair enough. I forgive you. There's always next November.
There is always next November,
or possibly September, which is when I might try and do it. Because Desert Bus isn't moving, and I'm not abandoning Desert Bus for a week so that I can... Well, for its duration. So, what did you learn in 2015?
There was a fair amount of introspection and whatnot, but the thing that I value most of the things that I was learning how to do was, honestly, just expanding my cooking skills. I mean, if you follow me on Instagram, you'll know that when I'm not posting pictures of my dog, or
click down below for a link to Ryan's Instagram.
Yeah, or passages out of books or, you know, very various interesting things that I find.
So a non-zero percentage of your Instagram is like photos of lasagna.
Yeah, or just things that I'm making. And a lot of times I'll try things that I've perhaps not even eaten before. I just want to try it out as mm-hmm. as a thing to cook. And sometimes I don't have the right ingredients. And so on the fly, I'll throw an audible or I'll call an audible and I'll just substitute stuff or I'll omit it completely. The one that I made just recently was I Googled beans and rice recipe. I almost combined beans and rice together to beans.
There's only like 4,000 or 5,000 of those. Yeah, so that's actually probably a very conservative estimate.
Yeah, so I Googled bean and rice recipes because I'm like, I just bought like 8 kilos of rice and and I like beans and I'm not trying to be a vegetarian, but I'm trying to cut down because meat is expensive. I'm trying to find ways of cooking interesting vegetarian dishes just to try it out. So I found a recipe. The flavor profile is ginger, spinach, coconut milk, and what was the other one? Or something else in there. Well, I guess the chickpeas. The chickpeas and the spinach don't really have a lot of flavor. They're more of the texture. But those are the big ingredients. And yeah, so you just you make them, make it in the pot, and then I just poured it over rice. And it was really good. And I hadn't tried a recipe quite like that. I've only had very limited experience with cooking with ginger, and it's largely in like soups and whatnot to like make a, like if you're making an Asian based soup, what, you know, whatever an Asian based soup means, but usually in the recipe books that's what it will be, some sort of Asian based soup. Usually it involves fish oils, soy sauce, hoisin sauce, those kinds of flavors going in there, and ginger tends to be one of them. So I occasionally will buy ginger root and just have it on hand in case I want to do something like that. But this one was a different one. It wasn't a soup. It was a topping.
I feel like that's the mark of being an adult. Like, one of the marks of being an adult. Like, when you were a child, the adults in your house chiefly prepare food for you. And mm-hmm. the things that you make are sort of very simple.
Mm-hmm.
I speak purely from my own experience. Because I'm an okay cook, but I'm just okay.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're sort of, like, in your early 20s and you're like a teenager and a college student, you sort of, the mark is that it's not so much that you can make anything into food. It's just that you'll eat anything.
Mm.
So whatever, like what do we have in the house? That's what I'm eating.
Yeah.
As an adult, you're like, okay, what do I have? How do I make this into a dish?
Yeah.
And then you make it into delicious food.
Yeah.
And that is a very interesting skill to acquire. It took me a long time to sort of be able to dig through my cupboards with no plan and go, okay, this, and this,
mm-hmm.
and dig out the flour, and we'll make drop biscuits.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing, too, is that transition not just from what can I find in my cupboards, but also, what do I keep stocked?
Yeah, what can I put in my cupboards so that I can do this whenever I want?
Yeah, to give yourself versatility beyond like salt and pepper. If you look at the Instagram account, there's a fair number of things that I made. The biggest one, I think I made pesto for the first time. And I bought pesto from the market, and then eventually I was able to get I stripped the plants of the leaves because I got them as a bunch with roots intact. So I cut the roots off and then I cut the leaves off. So I was left with the stalks and I put the stalks in water and they re-rooted themselves. The roots I tried putting in another container and I think I drowned them out because the roots did not sprout, but the stalks developed roots. And eventually I transplanted that into a pot with soil. And so now I have a full basil plant growing on my windowsill. And so I've developed a little bit of a garden. Yeah, it's pretty much
infinity basil now all of a sudden.
Oh yeah, I mean, it takes forever to get enough basil to make a new pesto. But, I mean, you can make a pesto out of anything. Basil is not the only ingredient, but
so you'll find that basil is the B in up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A, start.
But yeah, so I made pesto, and then from the pesto I made a really simple flatbread pizza. You know, just I made a pizza base, like a dough, spread the pesto on there, got some bocconcini, sauteed up some spinach, and then just kind of layered it all on there with a drizzle of balsamic vinaigrette, and I threw it in the oven for a little bit, and boom, I had myself a pizza.
I also had a pizza recently. It was frozen. I bought it. It was delicious. I bought it at the grocery store.
Yeah. So that, I'm not saying that I learned how to cook, but the various things that I cooked that forced me to develop my skills, I'm very happy with how 2015 went. And there are certainly much more things that I'm looking forward to doing, like not butchering my own chicken, but getting a whole chicken and carving out the parts to be able to like make soup stock and have this and have that, as opposed to just paying the expensive part for only the sections that they've pre-cut. So I'm looking for those kinds of skills.
Hmm. Neat. As a vegetarian, I don't really have to think too hard about like butchering celery. I just sort of cut it up.
Yeah, but then you have to wonder whether you're gonna chop it and quarter it, or if you're gonna like finely cut it, or julienne it, or
no. I have a very strict sort of celery cutting policy because I'm aware of what celery texture I like.
Yeah.
So tops, bottoms go off. Cut all the stalks in half. Dice it. Good to go.
I don't think I cut them in half. I think I just, usually quarters. It's got to be about an inch and a half long, but I think I leave them intact. I don't go in half.
Yeah. No. I'm all about the stalks cut in half.
Fair enough.
Yeah, my thing that I learned is nobody cares.
Please elaborate, because yeah. that sounds weird. The thing I learned about nobody cares about. Oh, okay. Fair enough. Have a nice day.
No, not that nobody cares about it. I mean, probably nobody cares about it, but, and it isn't sort of rooted in dark cynicism. Mm. No, one of the things I did this year was I learned to swing dance. We talked about it in the podcast with Ryan, where we had multiple Ryans, about productivity and things like that. And and busyness and the things you would like to get busy with. And one of the things was, I said, I want to learn to dance. And I did.
In a sense, you wanted to get jiggy with it.
That's not what that means. That means dancing in the same way that Netflix and chill means watching movies,
but
Ryan.
One is a precursor to the other. Chilling is a precursor to Netflix.
After this podcast, we'll Google things with Ryan.
Get G with it. I'm interrupting you.
It's
tell me how nobody.
Okay,
fine. Tell me how nobody cares.
Yeah. No, I went to a social dance at this. We have a really cool swing club in town, Hep Cats, and my anxiety was just like through the roof. Because there's that. I mean, there's a lot of toxic masculinity stuff that comes with dancing. There's a lot of I have a sort of high degree of anxiety in those settings in general, and from that and from other occasions this year, I am consistently reminding myself that everyone is sufficiently wrapped up in whatever is going on in their head that they don't actually care that much. The things that you do around them are more or less irrelevant. And my anxiety is rooted in the notion, like the imagining, that they care deeply about it. Because anxiety is narcissistic that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. And they don't notice. Nobody really notices or cares. That was the... I mentioned last Friday that I went dancing. And one of the really fun things about it was... every once in a while, I've been swing dancing. I started in summer. So I've been doing it for about 6 months now. I'm still not great, but I'm passable.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we mess up or lose the beat or you know, get caught halfway in a thing. And you just sort of figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody really minds. People aren't really looking. In that case, when they're watching, they're not really watching your expertise so much as your energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion that what matters is energy and not expertise is really interesting. It isn't so much that you... It is sufficient to do something badly with enthusiasm sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't something I'd really thought about very much. 2015 was a mental health year for me.
It's kind of strange. I was thinking about something like that, but not in the context of me. But there's bands that come and play at Chainsaw, and mm-hmm. a lot of times they are technically proficient. Not like, I'm talking about like their technique and their ability to make notes and melodies and whatnot are very proficient. But sometimes you'll be listening to a band and it's just like, it feels like there's no vitality behind it. Like mm-hmm. they are making all the right sounds, all the right notes, in all the right orders, and yet there's like a lifelessness to it. Whereas there are,
I have played those gigs.
Yeah, whereas, and I know some, as when you perform live, some of that is contingent on the crowd participation, that it is much easier to feel alive when people are actively rooting for you, as mm-hmm. opposed to just politely clapping between songs because they don't give a shit about what's going on. But yeah, and then there are some bands that come through the bar where, I mean, like, yeah, they could probably use a few more practice rounds before they start playing live.
But they play like they're playing for a million people.
But yeah, and they sell the hell out of it. Yeah. So yeah, I was just thinking about that last night, and it's funny how you mentioned that. Like, it's mm-hmm. if you're going to fail kind of deal, do it spectacularly with enthusiasm, because people respect that more than, you know, like, you just don't make waves or anything like that. Yeah.
And that is the thing that I learned, and I look forward to making more waves. And doing things with more energy, which also, I guess, has to do with being a shut-in. Oh my god, it all weaves together!
It's amazing how like, we don't have distinct individual problems, but that's, a lot of times there's some sort of thread that connects.
Yeah, it's almost like together. We're complex human beings with rich internal lives.
Oh man, who would have thought that?
And we just spend a bunch of our internal lives talking about it on the internet.
I guess that means we should stop cutting people up and assuming they're robots. Other than Descartes did that with, like, dogs, but...
Shit. So I had this talk on the Minecraft videos.
Shit just got dark, yo.
I didn't realize I also had to have the don't boil people talk in the podcast. Well, I'm going to go get my woot suit dad pants. And if you have a cool thing from 2015 that you think we should see, or if you want to brag about something or talk about something, you can leave a comment and we will read it. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook. You can subscribe. Mm-hmm. Makes us very happy. Gives us the validation that we need.
Yep.
I believe the quote is, smash that like button. but I have to go and talk with Ryan about why you shouldn't cut people up on the assumption that they're robots. So, I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
We're signing off.
Stay awesome in 2016. And so I said we should do a Lady and the Tramp thing, and he only had about this much of a Twizzler left, so he put it in his mouth, and I'm like, fuck it, I'm doing it.
Time to commit.
So I went in, and I was only able to, like, shave off just the tiniest little bit of the end, but I got a little bit of Twizzler, and I felt his beard caress my beard.